Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're jumping into a security failure that honestly should be a wake-up call for anyone who relies on vendor software.
It really should.
We're doing a deep dive into this critical and actively exploited cryptographic flaw in GladNet, CenterStack, and TrioFox platforms.
And when we say critical, we're not just talking about a minor bug. This one is a direct line to remote code execution, or RCE.
Right, RCE.
Yeah.
For anyone listening, that means an attacker isn't just stealing files. They can run their own code, take over the entire server, and, you know, potentially pivot into the rest of your network.
Exactly. It's the keys to the kingdom.
So our mission today is really to walk you through the technical chain of this attack. We want to show how one sort of shockingly basic mistake in key management spiraled into a global threat.
And understanding that chain is key, because this isn't just about patching one product. It's about how you evaluate risk.
The immediate danger here just can't be overstated.
No, it can't. What makes this so particularly dangerous is that it wasn't a configuration mistake by a user. This was a weakness baked into the product's architecture from the get-go.
A weakness baked in. I like that. And this isn't theoretical, right? People are being hit by this.
Oh, absolutely. The Huntress researchers who found it confirmed active exploitation campaigns. We're talking confirmed victims in healthcare, in tech. This is happening right now as we speak.
Okay, so let's get into the anatomy of the failure. Because the root cause is, I mean, it's just astonishingly simple.
It really is. This is what we call a catastrophic master key failure.
So the researchers at Huntress discovered that the encryption keys, you know, the very things meant to protect the data, weren't unique or random. They were hard-coded, just sitting there inside an application file, gladctll64.dll.
Which, in cryptography, is the number one thing you never, ever do. It just completely invalidates the entire point of using a strong algorithm like AES.
The analogy I saw in the source material was perfect. It's like a lock company making one single master key for every lock they sell, everywhere in the world.
And if one person finds that key,
the game is over. Every single door is open.
And get this, to make it even worse, the keys, these identical keys used in every single installation worldwide, were derived from two static 100-byte strings.
Okay, static strings of what?
Of Chinese and Japanese text.
You're kidding me. So an attacker doesn't need to be a math genius. They just need to find those two specific strings of text?
That's it. You reverse engineer the application one time, find those strings, and you now own the key to every single CenterStack and TrioFox server on the planet.
That is just unbelievable. It sounds like something out of a bad movie plot. Did the sources say why they chose those strings?
No definitive why, but it doesn't really matter. It's a classic case of security by obscurity, which is, you know, not security at all.
So once an attacker has this universal key, what exactly can they unlock?
They can go after the file's vart.dn handler. Its job is to decrypt something called access tickets. Think of these tickets as, like, digital hall passes for the system.
And I'm guessing these hall passes have some pretty sensitive info written on them.
They have everything. File paths, usernames, passwords, timestamps. So with the key, an attacker can just decrypt legitimate tickets they capture and steal credentials.
Which is bad enough.
But it gets worse. The real danger is forgery. They don't need to steal a ticket. They can just create their own fraudulent one from scratch, giving themselves total unrestricted access to any file they want.
So that's how they get in the door. But RCE is the ultimate goal. How do they make that jump from just reading files to actually running commands on the server?
Right. This is the really sophisticated part of the attack chain. It's a multi-step process.
Okay, so phase one is what we just talked about.
Yeah.
Extraction and forgery. They pull the hard-coded AES key and, just as important, the initialization vector, or PIFI, from that DLL file.
And then they start minting their own tickets.
And here's this little detail I found fascinating, almost like a taunt. The attackers, when they forged these tickets, set the expiration date to the year 900999.
It's, yeah, they're not just breaking in, they're building a permanent backdoor for themselves. That credential will never expire.
So they have this forever ticket. What's the next move? How do they pivot to RCE?
Okay, so with that forged ticket, they make a very specific request. They ask the server for one critical file, .web.config.
Why that file? What's so special about web.config?
That file contains the application's machine key.
The machine key. So that's different from the hard-coded AES key.
Totally different. The machine key is it's the cryptographic secret for the underlying Web framework, ASP.NET.
Right.
It's used to encrypt and validate session data, specifically something called view state. If you have the machine key, you can essentially impersonate the server itself.
So let me get this straight. They use the first hard-coded key, the one from the DLL, to forge a ticket.
Right.
They use that ticket to steal the second key, the machine key, from the config file.
Exactly. And that's when the final phase begins. They weaponize that machine key to exploit something called a view state deserialization vulnerability.
Deserialization. That sounds complex.
It is, but the concept is simple. It's the process of turning a stream of data back into a usable object. The vulnerability here is that the application trusts the view state data because it's signed with the machine key.
But the attacker now has that key.
The attacker has the key. So they can craft a malicious object, sign it with the stolen machine key, and the application will happily deserialize it and run whatever code is inside. And that is remote code execution.
Wow. From two strings of text to full server control. And we know who's doing this, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was an IP address mentioned.
Yes. For anyone doing threat hunting, hunters confirmed that attacks were coming from the IP address 147.124.216.205. That's a huge piece of forensic data for security teams.
This whole thing is just a masterclass on what not to do.
It's the perfect argument for why you never, ever roll your own crypto. The algorithm, AES, is perfectly secure. It was GladNet's custom implementation and, specifically, their key management that failed completely.
The vault was secure, but they left the key taped to the front door.
That's a perfect way to put it. Best practices, keys need to be unique, stored separately in something like a vault, and rotated. They violated every single one of those rules.
And you mentioned they hard-coded the initialization vector, the IV, as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that also a big deal?
Well, the IV is what adds randomness. It ensures that if you encrypt the same piece of data twice, you get a different result each time. If you hard-code the IV, you lose that randomness. It makes patterns much easier to spot and just makes an attacker's job simpler. It's another rookie mistake.
So the lesson is, use established libraries.
Please. Use things like OpenSSL or Bouncy Castle. They're vetted, they're tested, they're peer-reviewed. You don't have to reinvent the wheel, especially when the wheel is this important.
Okay, so let's shift to the action plan. If you're running CenterStack or TrioFox, what do you need to do, like, right now?
First thing, without a doubt, is you have to patch. The patch version is 16.1.110.420.56791. But before you patch, you have to do an inventory. Make sure you know every single place this software is running.
Okay, step one, patch everything. Step two is key rotation. And you said this is critical because patching alone isn't enough. Why not?
Because the patch stops attackers from getting the hard-coded key going forward. It does nothing about the attackers who already have it. More importantly, it does nothing about the machine key they may have already stolen. You have to assume that key is compromised.
So you have to generate a brand new machine key.
A brand new, cryptographically random machine key. And update your config files everywhere. You have to invalidate the key the attackers are holding.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, and finally, step three is forensics. Assume you're already breached.
You have to. And the number one indicator to search your logs for is that specific string. VGHPI7ETOZ DIZ IZ DDIZ EVAL3 MTCD2. If you see that, you have a problem.
And beyond that string.
Look for weird authentication logs. Look for any tickets with that year 99999 timestamp. And watch for a flurry of requests for web.config. That patterndath logon request web.config is the telltale sign of this attack.
Thinking bigger picture, how do you stop something like this from taking down the whole network?
It comes down to defense in depth. First, network segmentation. A file sharing platform should never, ever be on the same flat network as your domain controllers or critical databases. Isolate it.
So if the file server gets owned, the damage is contained.
Exactly. It's about limiting the blast radius. And this is where zero trust principles come in. Don't trust traffic just because it's inside your network. Validate everything.
And I guess hold your vendors accountable.
Absolutely. You have to start asking hard questions. How do you manage your keys? Can I see your SOC2 report? Your ISO 27001 certification? Don't just take their word for it that they're secure. Make them prove it.
It's just so striking how this fits a pattern we're seeing. Like the Movit transfer disaster. These file sharing systems are becoming such a huge target.
They are. And this case just drives home the point that a world-class algorithm like AES means nothing if the implementation is flawed. The entire security chain is only as strong as its absolute weakest link.
That really is the key takeaway.
Yeah.
Which leads to one last thought, really building on what you just said.
Uh-huh.
This whole flaw existed because the key came from two static simple text strings. The security wasn't based on strong math. It was based on the hope that no one would find those strings.
Obscurity, not security.
Exactly. So for you, the listener, a question to think about. How many other systems are out there right now? You know, legacy software, maybe countless IoT devices, all running on some developer's shortcut, where the entire security of a product or a network isn't resting on a strong cipher, but on the hope that nobody finds one single hard-coded universal value.
That's the question that should keep security professionals up at night. It's a systemic risk, and we've only seen the tip of the iceberg.
That's all the time we have for this deep dive. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.